Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf, or a nice cold one on a warm spring day hanging out on the deck. But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This is the GM Shuffle.
You're going to set the protection to Chris Jones. Without him in there, all of a sudden it's a different game. There's a lot of protections you can run now because you're not as worried about the one-on-ones. You feel like you can handle it.
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
Welcome to another edition of the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. I'm your host, Femi Abebefe. As always, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Our producer, Elliot Bowman, with us on the ones and twos. Michael, we dabbled with some college football over the weekend. A lot of quarterbacks, my beloved conference, the Pac-12, which is ending at the end of this season. Great quarterbacks in the Pac-12, but did you look at the QBs that we saw? Drake May, Caleb Williams. We got a lot for the NFL audience to go ahead and look at the guys who are going to be coming out in next year's draft.
You know, in my new book, which will be released tomorrow,
yes, sir.
Shameless plug, I understand. I talk about the great Dan Marino. And what happened to him in his draft class, and that was an incredible draft class. They had five quarterbacks, Blackledge, Tony Eason, you know, Marino, Elway, all that. But really, you know, Marino took a hit because of some character concerns started by a Pittsburgh newspaper that were not true, and his agent, Marvin Demoff, couldn't offset. So my point with tying that to today is this appears to me in just one Saturday of scouting, and obviously we got a long way to go, but there's three legitimate quarterbacks that may make this a great quarterback draft class without really peeling back the layers. I mean, we know Michael Penix Jr. is outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
Drake May, to me, was elite. And Caleb Williams won the Heisman last year, and he's a really good player. So, as I've said many times, if Caleb Williams would have come out last year, he would have been the first pick overall in the draft. So now the debate's going to turn to who's better, Drake May or Caleb Williams? You know, and then last night, I mean, we watched, you know, Florida State, and we saw, you know,
Jordan
Daniels.
Travis?
I mean,
Jordan Travis,
and then Jalen, and then the other kid from, you know, he's a little more inconsistent. He's down. He's like Spencer Rattler. He's not in that category. But to me, I think it's a worthy conversation, which leads us back, Femi, to what we talked about the Arizona Cardinals. Like, if I'm Monty Ossendorf and I watch Drake May, and I watch Caleb Williams, and whether I play Kyler Murray or not, I'm probably going to win 3-4 games, maybe. Okay? Like, May's a legitimate kid. If you talk to anybody in that kind of world, you know, no social media, all about – I mean, he's kind of got a lot of Peyton Manning qualities. I was told by somebody that knows him that had been around Peyton that he's got a lot of Peyton qualities. I don't want to jinx the kid and put that on too much pressure on him. But if you're Monty Ossendorf, what are you doing? I know you'll need to watch more tape and you have to get it clarified, but what would you do?
Well, we evaluate the season, and at the end of the season, if we find out that these kids are legit, you got to keep the options open. You got to keep the options open to taking one of these quarterbacks because, like you, I've been a big Drake May fan since last year. I remember watching him last year. They were played Appalachian State in the first week of the season last season. And I was like, who the hell is this kid? Like, this kid can play. Like this guy's good. Nobody's really talked about this North Carolina quarterback. And then you hear the backstory of, like, oh, like, he's one of the May kids. Like, the May family is a big, like, North Carolina family. Like, his brother, it was Luke May, hit the game-winning shot in the Elite Eight, like, a handful of years ago for North Carolina's basketball team. Like the May family is a big North Carolina family. And, like, he might be the best athlete in that family, probably is the best athlete in that family. I believe his brother played Major League Baseball or was on a college baseball team at least. But, I mean, he's really impressive.
I mean, he didn't want to take any visits. I mean, they didn't have to beat anybody to get him. He was going to North Carolina.
It was all the way.
He was all in on North Carolina. That's, he was, you know. And so, look, one thing, you know, I think when you're watching players, greatness jumps out. It really mm-hmm. does. It's not hard to see great. It really isn't. It's hard to distinguish good from great, and sometimes we get cloudy on that. Mm-hmm. But seeing greatness, now I know he threw two picks, all that. I really don't care about that. I care about his rhythm. I care about his arm attached to his feet. I care about his ability to process, his ability to understand situational football. I mean, that was really impressive. And so is Caleb Williams, and so is Michael Penix. And I think, to me, this is going to prove to be an incredible college year of evaluating quarterbacks. And I think it's really, as Bill Parcells often said to me, we can only take what the colleges bring us. Mm-hmm. And now we're starting to see more of these guys, and it isn't our just RPOs. So I think it's, to me, that was the best part of the weekend, watching these games, watching these quarterbacks play, and you know, and seeing them and getting a chance to evaluate them and understanding the teams. I thought it was incredible.
Well, it's a great time to talk about these quarterbacks because we're going to do our blue chips, red chips quarterbacks. Everyone's been waiting all offseason for this. We're going to go ahead and figure out who are the 10 best quarterbacks in the National Football League. But what did you make of Shedeur Sanders, Deion's kid? I thought he was terrific. I thought he was terrific against TCU. I didn't watch much Jackson State, so I didn't have a reference point to go off of. But in one game, I was like, holy hell, like this guy can play. Like, he's really good.
Yeah, I don't think – I thought that – look, I think this whole Deion nonsense is the people critiquing him. I was concerned he wasn't going to be able to get his team synced together with so many new players. But this notion that he doesn't have a good roster is ridiculous. I mean, what we see from Deion is we see a guy who truly can motivate players. He's got great ability to motivate, and players resonate to him. Even though a lot of the kids that are playing today don't remember him playing, they know who he is, and they can look him up on YouTube. That being said, he also has a way to connect. He's also demanding. If you look at any of his YouTube, I mean, he is the CEO of the program. And he hired a really good staff. I mean, Sean Lewis, the offensive coordinator of Colorado, who was the head coach at Kent State, I know Sean, so I'll say this as a friend, but I also know Sean as a coach. He's outstanding. Mm-hmm. And he coached, their offense was really well coached, and so was their defense. And it's a tribute to Deion because he's taken the CEO role. He's not trying to be something he's not. He's the CEO of Colorado football. He's a great evaluator of talent because you could see it in who he picked, whether it's Travis Hunter, who's a five-star, whether it's his own son. But he recognizes talent. He sees it. And he was able to bring his team together. I think it was great. And I think Sanders is another guy you got to take a look at. He made great decisions on the move. You know, the second play within the play, he was able to find it. The fourth and two that really wins the game when he throws the out over there was out. It was a great throw. So, yeah, I mean, you got to put – I mean, I think there's – I saw three that I said, okay. Now, I'm like you. I haven't seen enough of Sanders to put him up there, but he may get up there.
He's up there for me. He's I watched him, and I was like, oh, this is one of the five best quarterbacks
don't
in the
you
country.
Need more time, though? I mean, you usually need more time. I mean, you're still working on Barry Sanders. You need more time on this Sanders?
Well, I finally got to be LT tape, so we're still evaluating that.
You know, and you're getting your ass ripped on Sopranos, too, by the way. I've got more people like, you know, when's Femi, you know, he promised and he didn't deliver.
Well, we'll have a surprise for people coming up on Thursday. That's that. I was hoping you wouldn't bring that up, but there's a surprise for folks on Thursday as it pertains to the Sopranos. But so Shedeur Sanders, Deion's kid, like to me, like when you said that greatness you can see easily, like good, it's almost harder to evaluate good than it is to evaluate greatness. I'm not saying that this guy is like the best quarterback ever, but from what I saw on Saturday, I was like, holy hell, like this kid is one of the five best quarterbacks I'll see in the country. Like, I don't think we're going to see five better quarterbacks. And I actually want to highlight a guy that I know you've been high on. Not many people outside of Pacific Northwest know him, but how about the Washington State quarterback, Cameron Ward? You've mentioned him a couple of times.
About that.
You've mentioned him a couple of times. Like, he was outstanding on Saturday night.
Oh, he's really good. He's really good. You know what I loved? I loved that on our show on Saturday, everybody was on the Colorado State train.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if you remember, we had somebody, I think it was Wes Reynolds we had on the show. And I'm like, Wes, love Colorado State. He went through all his dissertation on it. And I'm like, you know, Cameron Ward's really good. You know, like they got a really good quarterback at Washington State, you know. Like, again, how about Jaden Delora at Arizona? Now, he threw an interception and he fumbled, but he's Bryce Young light. And I'm not saying he's going to be a top five pick, but he's Bryce Young light. He does a lot of things. He had a 50-yard run against, now I know it was against Northern Arizona. They go to Mississippi State this week, but you know, he's got some stuff to him, you know, and I watched DJ yesterday. I thought DJ looked better at Oregon State, but he still was slow process, and I didn't get the sense of a rhythm with him, right? Like with May, with Ward, with Delora, with Sanders, you know, with Penix, you get a rhythm to their game. You can feel it, right? I think this is going to be an unbelievable year for quarterbacks, and I'll go on the limb and saying today, September the 4th, that the debate between May and Caleb Williams will go on until probably the commissioner walks on that stage.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun year to evaluate, I think, especially when we get to the draft process. Like, the regular season is going to be a lot of fun, but once we get to the draft process, this could be a situation where we have, like, 15, 20 guys get drafted at quarterback. Like, there's a lot of really good quarterbacks in college football right now, and if you're not a college football fan, I know we mainly are an NFL podcast, but people who do not watch college football, it's like, take a look this year, because you're going to see guys who are going to be playing on Sundays, and you're going to see them playing on Saturdays this season, because I think we have a terrific group of quarterbacks, like Caleb Williams, Shedeur Sanders, Drake May. I don't know which one's going to be the best. Like, Caleb, some of the out-of-structure stuff that Caleb does, I don't know if you saw the throw that he had on the sideline, Michael.
Yeah.
Like, he is like a magician. Now, I want to see him play a little bit more on time, but the out-of-structure stuff is just like that's just the natural instincts that we talk about when we evaluate the quarterback position.
Yeah, I think no question we want to see him do that. I mean, but that's just what you got to, it's a process, right? Scouting is about finding. And so when you see guys that fit the car, I mean, May's 6'4", you know, he looks like Peyton Manning back there. He's actually, you know, he looks like he's a really good player. I mean, I'll tell you another one, put him on the radar. Dante Moore, UCLA. I mean, I don't know if you watched any of that game against Coastal Carolina, but here's another one.
He's a freshman. It's
a shame the Pac-12 is splitting up, because there are a lot of good quarterbacks in the Pac-12. But I do think that you can see it. You could see it. Okay, like I could see it with Williams. I could see it with May. The off-schedule plays are really good. I think this is going to be the conversation through the year. And here's one we left out. We left out Sam Hartman, who if I'm a better, I'm going to play Sam Hartman for the Heisman this year. Because with that powerful Notre Dame PR firm, they can get behind you. And Hartman can be in this conversation. Now, he's an older player. I think he's 24.
Yeah.
But Hartman's really good, too. There's one we missed.
You mentioned the PR machine. He has a whole broadcasting company behind him, NBC.
Exactly. they're I mean, that's a good play. I think he's 12-1 to win the Heisman. Don't rule him out. They played North Carolina State this week.
Yeah.
I think that's we should do a Heisman watch.
He was 25-1 last week, so the odds are already moving. We'll talk some more NFL news and notes on the other side. It's the GM Show. The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds, and so much more. As the first round continues on, you can bet sides, totals, player props, everything at your disposal over on DraftKings. All you have to do, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SHUFFLE. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SHUFFLE only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. Well, we got our college football talk out of the way, but I thought it was important to highlight how many great quarterbacks we have in college football. And once again, we're going to do our blue chips, red chips quarterbacks coming up a little bit later on here in the podcast. But let's discuss some news and notes from around the NFL before we get into that. One being Cooper Kupp, the Los Angeles Rams All-Pro wide receiver, former Offensive Player of the Year. Well, Michael, Cooper Kupp, after being listed as day-to-day, according to Sean McVay, and talking about how he had a setback, he is now visiting a specialist in Minnesota to further understand his hamstring issue. And when I hear that, it sounds like he's a guy that's not going to be playing on Sunday. What's behind this thing?
I never have heard of anybody going to see a hamstring specialist. You know, I mean, there's something else here. Could it be his lower back? Could it, you know, I mean, there's always something that creates a problem when it comes to hamstrings, you know, when soft tissue injury. So I have never seen, I mean, you know, I'm not saying it's not doable or plausible, but I'm just saying I've never seen a guy have to go to a, they go to specialists for feet and ankles and all that. Mm-hmm. But I've never seen a guy that does that for, you know, for this, right? So I got to believe that this is probably something to be concerned about, really. I mean, you got to be concerned about it. And I think when you look at Kupp's career coming off the injury, you know, and you see what he's done, I mean, I think what people misconstrue is the 2021 season. I mean, he was incredible, 1,900 yards. I mean, there's only been one other year where he gained 1,000 yards. That was in 19. And he averaged 12.4. That he's had that year, and he's had the 21 year. But other than that, you know, and he's got 46 career touchdowns so far, right? Mm-hmm. In his career, 46. 26 of them came those two seasons.
Mm. Yeah, it's. I don't know what's going on with his injury, but I would be stunned at this point if he plays Week 1 on Sunday against the Seattle Seahawks. I'm looking at the line right now. I see that Seattle is a 5-point favorite. Some places have 5.5, but 5 seems to be consensus. As a betting man, I don't want to lay points Week 1, but if you were to lay points with any favorite, I feel like laying 5 with Seattle, that line's probably going to close around 6 or so once Cooper Kupp is actually
rolled out. Yeah, maybe it will. I just know the last two games against them in Seattle and down in Los Angeles, you know, the Rams have they'll play them tough. If you're going to bet against the Rams, be careful in September. This will be the healthiest they will be. Aaron Donald will be great, right? Mm-hmm. Stafford will be good. He'll be really good. And Sean McVay will be able to do some things because nobody's seen it. So I would just say I would be really careful. I might be on the – I mean, I'm working on it this week, mm-hmm. but that's one of the games that I haven't eliminated from my board. And I would say to me, everybody's going to go against the Rams here, but these are too close, these kind of games, whether Kupp plays or not, I don't really care. These mm-hmm. games are usually too close, and the Rams with Stafford have at least a chance because he can make plays.
Yeah, we're starting to put our handicapping caps on. In fact, Michael, I don't know if you saw this or not, but I went ahead and signed up. Circa Survivor, Circa Million. We signed up yesterday. We're locked and loaded. We're ready to go.
We got both of them. I love it. We're ready to go. When you signed up, did you have your Justin Fields uniform on? Were you already in that?
I had my Tua jersey on, actually.
Oh, good. I love that. Yeah, well, I'm glad. I love that. That's awesome.
We're good to go.
So you signed up for both, right?
Yes, I signed up for
both. Have you always done both?
So last year I was on a team with the Millions, and then I did my own Survivor. So this year I'm doing my own on both. So
You're doing your own on both.
Yeah. Like I enjoyed being on a team, but like I want to have my own conviction. And like when you're on a team, right. You're kind of debating different things. It's like, all right, like this is your pick, this is your pick. And like sometimes you don't agree with all of your picks. I was like, let me see how I can actually do. And it's unlikely
how
that
did I finish
in the
do?
Money. We didn't finish in the money last year. I mean, it was a tough year for us for handicapping wise, and obviously once you get to the second half of the season, you start trying to do different things to go ahead and stray from what the consensus is going to be because you're trying to make up ground. So for our actual record, like we were above 500, but like our actual record and like what we liked in games, it's tricky because like you do the whole contest strategy stuff to try to make up ground. But this year, I'm hoping that we can get off to a good start. I'm hoping that I can get off to a good start.
Well, I think this people that don't know. The Survivor's hard. It's one of the hardest contests to do. You just have to pick one winner. Sounds easy on paper, hard to do.
It is not.
The Millions is even harder. You got to be 72% accurate mm-hmm. to win the damn thing. You got to be at least 70% to get in the money, and they pay, and at least Circa does, they pay every quarter. So it's a hard contest to do. I mean, you know, I think I like to look at the lines on Thursday when the circle lines come out for the contest, because for me it's an indication of the lines of where they could potentially be Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to give away. A lot of times, though, I will say this to you, when the lines have moved or when there's been a disadvantage, it's going to get – everybody jumps on it in the contest and they end up losing.
Yep. Like those stale lines that people talk about, like, oh, like there's so much like plus EV on this because the line is here and it's stale here. Oftentimes you want to kind of play against that and like take the bad number, which is like kind of like it's in theory it sounds really bad, but you kind of have to do that to go ahead and like stray from the pack and actually win the contest. So we're hoping that we can finish in the money this year. It's like top 100 gets paid out in the contest. There's thousands of people in the contest, so that'll be difficult to do, but hopefully we can go ahead and do that.
We'll if you're in Vegas, sign up. Go to the Circa and sign up. It's really a good contest. The other thing I think you have to do in anything that you do in terms of decision making is you have to eliminate. I think that's one of the most important things to do. You know, like for me, I'll never give out a Raider game as on when I'm doing the show on Sunday as a play. Not that I bet, because I don't. Mm-hmm. But I would never do, because obviously I have a vested interest in that.
Yeah.
And so, but to me, there's games you've got to just kind of eliminate. We're going to talk about Nick Bosa. You know, he's not in yet. And Kyle's even a little bit worried about him coming in.
How could you not?
Today's Monday. You know, I mean, and I would think it would have gotten done. Who's that reporter that predicted it would get done? I told you he doesn't have sources. I told you that. I mean, he was wrong on the 76ers too, you know. And so I think if they don't come in soon enough, you've got to be careful about that game. San Francisco's defense is a lot different with Bosa than it is without him.
Speaking of guys coming in, I mean, this Chris Jones situation, he's not going to play Thursday. I don't see how he gets in there. Like, unless they come to an agreement within the next 5 minutes and we get a notification on X that he has signed. Today is Thursday for practice week for the Kansas City Chiefs and the Detroit Lions. He didn't practice yesterday on Sunday. Unlikely to practice today. Like, he said he wants to hold out until week 8. He saved up money to go ahead and take those fines and miss the game checks. But how does this impact Kansas City's defense? Like, he is like their best defensive player, and it's a big drop-off without him in the lineup.
I think the other thing, too, I agree. And I think the reason I agree is because weather. We don't talk enough about weather in September. We talk at length at weather in November and December and January, which it really is insignificant, right? It's hard to catch a cold football. It's hard to kick a cold football, but players can play in it. Where you get into a lot of issues is in the heat and humidity. So the weather report for, not that I'm a weatherman, but the weather report for Thursday night, it's going to be 82 degrees, 10-mile-an-hour winds, and rain showers. Okay, so I don't know what the humidity is going to be, but it's going to be hard for him to get off his couch. And I'm sure he's working out. Mm-hmm. But to go out there and battle and play for 70 plays, I mean, that's what made the Travis Hunter thing on Saturday so incredible. The kid played over 100 plays in the heat and humidity in Texas and played at a high standard. I mean, he played like you couldn't believe. That's great conditioning. That's a tribute to their head coach who has his team in shape. So I think that would be hard. I don't just reading Andy Reid's comments this morning as I prep for the show. I think he clearly knows he's not going to be. And look, let's be clear here: the strength of Detroit's their offensive line. That's the strength of their team. And you take away one of their players, the best player on the Chiefs on defense, you take him out. I mean, Goff's going to be really happy about this.
Well, Andy Reid was asked about it and if Chris Jones was going to be available for this Thursday's game. He said, quote, "I can't tell you. I don't know. I don't know what his agenda is, whether he's coming or not coming. We're rolling right now. I haven't put that much thought into that part." So that's where things stand from Andy Reid's standpoint. Here's what Chris Jones' teammate did say, though, Travis Kelce, on his podcast, the New Heights podcast, with his brother Jason Kelce.
Oh, is there any updates on Chris Jones, how he's handling this situation? Do you want to talk about it?
Oh, man. Chris, can you please come back? You're really scaring me, man. I don't get it. You must know something that I don't know, because I just don't get it. I really want to get another Super Bowl ring with you, brother. This is me bargaining you to just come back and play football for the Chiefs. Please, we need you.
Well, I just hope you bad.
And yeah, I don't know what the situation is. Obviously,
well, the situation is you guys aren't paying him enough, and I think you should hold off as long as possible.
Those two guys are obviously good together, brothers Travis and Jason Kelce. But you hear Travis Kelce talk about it. He said, hey, "You're scaring me, man. We need you." like I'm sure Mahomes feels the same way.
How about Steve Spagnuolo? How do you think he feels? Oh, right?
He's like, please come back.
You know, I mean, here's the impact of the injury. So if you're Detroit and you're Ben Johnson, and the first thing you do on all offseason was to set the protection to Chris Jones. Mm-hmm. You're going to set the protection to Chris Jones. And without him in there, now all of a sudden you don't have to worry as much about how we're setting the – there's only certain protections we can run. We want to make sure we got him doubled. We want to do this. Now he's not in there. All of a sudden it's a different game. You know, it's like when Freeney would come out of a game when he played for the Colts, take a shot down the field. You had a better chance to throw a deep ball. Same thing. Chris Jones not in the game. There's a lot more – there's a lot of protections you can run now because you're not as worried about the one-on-ones. You feel like you can handle it. Not many people can handle the big fella. I mean, the thing about if you go back and watch the Eagle-Chiefs Super Bowl, and I've watched it numerous times, I mean, he wasn't as dominant in that game because none of the defensive linemen could be. They couldn't really get their footing. The field was so bad, you know, that it impacted them, and it impacted everybody. But without him in the game, without him, like if you watch the Raider game or you watch the Bengal game or you watch any of those games at the end of the year when he was taking over, it's unbelievable. And Kelsey's right. They got to pay him, but it's hard. You got Mahomes. You got Kelce, who's one of the selfless players in the league. I mean, he said he wants to win. He demonstrates that. I mean, he should be paid over $20 million a year as the best receiver in football, and he's not, and he doesn't get it.
We have to have a 30 for 30 on the sod father who was in charge of the field at the Super Bowl. But on the other side, we'll do Blue Chips, Red Chips, quarterbacks. All right, let's get to it, Michael. Our blue chip and red chip quarterbacks. And before we get into the list, let's talk about the guys who just missed out, because there is a big name who just missed out on the blue chips and red chips quarterbacks, and that is Aaron Rodgers. So you have Aaron Rodgers, Tua Tagovailoa, and Dak Prescott on guys who just missed out on making your list here. I'm sure there's a lot of Jets fans, Cowboys fans, Dolphins fans wondering why. Can you explain why those guys did not make the cut?
Well, I mean, it's not too hard to figure out why Rodgers didn't make the cut. I mean, you know, he didn't play well last year. I mean, this is based on last year. It's not based on the career.
Yeah.
You know, it's based on what he did last year. You know, you could argue that, you know, look, I didn't think Dak played to a level that was conducive to a red chip level. I never feel like Dak's going to be a blue chip player, but certainly Dak should be a red chip player. Mm-hmm. But you got to protect the football. I mean, Russell Wilson didn't play to that level. Matthew Stafford wasn't healthy enough. Carr, who was in our group last year, didn't play to it. Tua wasn't healthy. But when you really watch Tua, he benefits from those receivers. Look, I'm not taking anything away from him, but there's some times where he gets bailed out quite a bit and makes mistakes. Those receivers help him. I think sometimes, I mean, could you imagine if Geno Smith, you know, would have never been thought of to make the list, but you couldn't argue with the year he had.
Yeah. And that's the crazy thing for Geno Smith. It's like he was completely off the radar at this time. I mean, we were talking about Jimmy Garoppolo going to Seattle, Baker Mayfield going to Seattle, all these different quarterbacks. And then here comes Geno Smith, wins comeback player of the year, and is now the bona fide QB1 in Seattle. So let's get into the red chips list. Geno Smith is one of the red chips that you have on your list. Kirk Cousins of the Minnesota Vikings, Trevor Lawrence of the Jacksonville Jaguars, Jared Goff of the Detroit Lions, and then Lamar Jackson of the Baltimore Ravens.
I debated to put Lamar in there, you know, because he missed some games this last season. You know, he was in 12 games, but his numbers were still good. I mean, he's still a threat, and he's going to be a problem. I couldn't imagine him not being a red chip when he's on the field. He's not going to be like Deshaun Watson was last year. So I had to put him in there. I thought Lawrence, the second half of the season, really improved. You can't argue with Cousins. I mean, you can argue he doesn't win the big games, but you can't argue with his numbers. He's kind of like Warren Moon. He puts up incredible numbers. Doesn't take his team to a Super Bowl, but he puts up incredible numbers, and you can't argue with that. And then Goff. I mean, Goff didn't turn the ball over the second half of the season after the five turnovers against Dallas. He played really well, protected the football, made all the throws. You know, they've got a good line in front of them. You know, I'm not a big Goff fan because I believe, like, when you pressure him and speed the game up or make it a drop-back pass game. But when Goff can run the ball, remember, Detroit's run game last year, they were one of the higher percentages of run first than throw first. And so that really – you need that. You need Goff to have a good running game. Again, that's not a weakness. That's just the way you have to manage the quarterback. When he was good at the Rams, Gurley was humming. They could run the football. Their offensive line was playing better. I think he's got those things in Detroit.
Yeah. No, that offensive line is terrific. That makes that offense go. It makes Ben Johnson, the offensive coordinator, his job, it makes it much easier. And it makes Jared Goff's job much easier because that's when he actually plays well, when he is protected, like you outlined. Trevor Lawrence, I think he's one of those guys that maybe when we have this conversation next year, he might be in the blue chip category. But for right now, he's in the red chip category. What did you see from Trevor Lawrence now that he got some really good coaching in year two under Doug Peterson?
I think we saw more of what we saw at Clemson, right? I thought his mechanics were better. His decision-making still wasn't great, but I thought, you know, he was really effective throwing the ball. I mean, his interception percentage was 1.4, which is pretty damn good when you look at it. But he got bailed out a few times. Look, with Ridley on the field now, I think this offense is going to take off. If ATN stays healthy, which I believe he can, this offense is going to take off because Ridley was the missing link to it. Ingram's not really a tight end. He's more of a wide receiver. But with they can really get it going. If they protect him, you got a hard matchup. Who's your fourth corner or covering Ingram? Who's your fourth corner going to cover Christian Kirk? Who's covering Zay Jones? I mean, those are hard questions. You want to play man, you know, we never talk about it. The value of the third corner is significant, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you go out there and you're playing a team like Jacksonville, how are we matching up? How are we matching up on this?
Yeah, Lawrence, I mean, he's been the guy that we all projected coming out of Clemson. Top-ranked quarterback, one of the top high school recruits. Like, he's been a high-pedigree guy all throughout his career dating back to high school, and he's living up to it down there in Duval County. Big expectations for Jacksonville this year. I'm not as high on Jacksonville. We've talked about that all throughout this offseason, but big expectations nonetheless there in Duval County.
Yeah, it's funny. The first time I saw Lawrence, the first time I saw him play, he came off the bench. He was backing up somebody, and I had the same reaction that I had with Drake May. Mm. Same one. Like, this guy's special. This guy's got it. You know, and he was a great kid and all those things. See, I think, too, you know, part of the conversation with the Cardinals is, you know, your best player has to be the best leader. He's got to be the one who cares the most. I mean, you know, to get everybody else to care as much as he does. And if you don't do that, if you're not that kind of guy, again, you know, I mean, I'm sure that when Jonathan Gannon and when Monty Ostendorf walked in the building and they saw the picture of Buda Baker on the field and Kyler over there, you know, man, they're going to change.
I think it was Kelly Bryant, I believe, was the quarterback that was starting ahead of Trevor Lawrence at Clemson. That didn't last
That's right.
very long. That didn't last very long once Trevor Lawrence actually got to campus. Your blue-chip quarterbacks, this is the creme de la creme at the
would
most
you,
important
Let me ask
position.
You this question. Yeah. I know you might need more tape, but would you have put Aaron Rodgers in the red chip after that year he had?
I would have. I still would have, I think. Just because
How could you grade? Yeah. Honestly, you're grading on past performance.
Yeah, and I'm guilty of that. I admit it. I'd be guilty of grading on past performance, but – I mean, I still look at the red chips list, and I said, if I had one game to win last season of those quarterbacks, would I want these guys ahead of Aaron Rodgers? And I would have picked Rodgers ahead of a lot of those guys.
Now, well, Lawrence won the game you had to win. Goff won a game you had to win against them up there. You know, Cousins won, you know, he didn't win the playoff game. Geno had a chance in that one. I mean, then is then, now is now. I think Aaron Rodgers will be better this year, but I don't think you can, you know, look, against Detroit, in Detroit, they threw those interceptions to kill him.
Yeah, he did. In both Detroit games. The game in Detroit and then the game in week 18, he was throwing interceptions as well.
Right.
The season
you got to grade what you see. You got to grade what you see.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. But, yeah, I'm admitting it. I would be guilty. I would have graded off of past performance, but kudos to you for not looking at that.
I'm not trying to get it as a prop. I'm just saying I think we have to – see, this evolves into handicapping teams, mm-hmm. right? If you constantly think then is now instead of now is now, you're going to keep making mistakes because you're like, you're not saying this. Now, if he flips it and all of a sudden, oh, wow, he's really much better this year. But even in the one preseason game against the Giants, it didn't look like he was in rhythm. He missed a crosser that he never really misses.
Yeah.
You know, the Giants were playing their second-team defense against him.
Yeah.
Now, I understand the offensive line's going to need some work. But, you know, I just think, to me, you got to, every year you start with a new grade.
Yeah. I think a lot of that hype from that preseason game is that they got bailed out by a pretty advantageous pass interference call. like that drive was about to end if not for that pass interference against the Giants' second or third string cornerback, and that's when they were able to continue on and go down the drive and score a touchdown. But it wasn't the
smoothest.
I think
he caught that pass, though. I mean, the kid, Garrett Wilson, caught that pass on the right sideline you're talking about?
Yeah, on the right sideline. I think it was incomplete.
Yeah, he caught that pass. He caught it.
Okay, well,
he did.
Go back and take a look at the
tape. It was a hell of a catch, hell of a throw. I mean, he caught it. I mean, they called it, but he caught it.
Yeah, well, Wilson's a stud. That's a guy that I think we're going to see.
But look, I'm not a big QBR guy, but Rodgers was ranked 27th in QBR. Russell Wilson was 28th. We kill Russell Wilson.
That's fair. Yeah, that's a fair point. Because Rodgers, there's a reason why Green Bay didn't make the playoffs last year.
We think Ryan Tannehill completely sucks. He was 24th.
Jets are going to need the 2020 version or the 2021 version of Aaron Rodgers, not the 2022.
Yeah. And I think you have to modify your expectation of that. I think he'll be good. Do I think he's going to be the elite? The reason he's getting older is it's because it's hard to maintain that elite.
100% is. He's 40 now, right? Like it's or 39 at least. Like I guess he's getting up there.
No, he's 40, I think. Yeah, 40. I think he turned 40.
Yeah, well. Good luck to the New York Jets. Hopefully he plays well because the expectations are very high in the Meadowlands. Expectations are high, though, for this group of blue-chip quarterbacks, and it'll start with Kansas City Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes, the reigning MVP, also won the Super Bowl last season, two Super Bowls. Mahomes putting together a Hall of Fame caliber career so far through six seasons as a starter. Joe Burrow of the Cincinnati Bengals, also a blue chip. Jalen Hurts of the Philadelphia Eagles, Justin Herbert of the Los Angeles Chargers, and then Josh Allen of the Buffalo Bills. But Mahomes is the best of the best, and there's no arguments coming from anybody in that regard.
No. I mean, you know, fourth quarter comeback, fourth quarter game-winning drives. I mean, you know, he had four of them last year. I mean, you can't really argue that, right? You can't argue that at all. And so I don't think you can argue with any of these guys the way they played. I think Josh, you know, probably needs to run less but be a dominant runner. I don't think people realize Jalen Hurts ran for less of an average rushing. He had about 50 more rushing attempts, but his average per rush was down. But the threat of the run was there, and people had to defend it. And I think Josh has got to kind of play that way and stay healthy, you know. And Burrow's pretty steady. I think this is – I don't know how you could argue with anybody in this group. Herbert, to me, I mean, they don't run the ball enough for him. 32nd in every single rushing category. I mean, they were 31st. To Tampa was 31st, 32nd in every rushing category. But if they give Burrow – if they give Herbert more of a balance to where he can control the pace of the game – there's no telling how great he can be.
Yeah, I mean, Herbert, he jumps off the screen when you watch him play. And as a Washington Husky fan, I still sit back and think, I'm like, how the hell did this team not make the playoff Oregon when Justin Herbert was their quarterback? But, I mean, that might have to do
words,
with coaching.
Mario.
Might have to do with the coaching there. But I want to have more of this Jalen Hurts conversation on the other side, but we can begin it here. Hurts was not a red chip last year. He was not on the radar for a lot of people. Vaults into the blue chip category here in 2023. It's a testament to what he's been doing all throughout his career, dating back to his freshman season at Alabama. I think every single season he has gotten better.
Right. I mean, look, last year he goes down to Tampa, and when they had to throw the ball, they couldn't throw it. It's a credit, really, to the Eagles for building the six-back offense around him and taking what he does really well and modifying that into something that was great. And I think there lies the difference. It's the kids' work habits and the scheme meeting one at a center, and all of a sudden you get this incredible player.
Yeah, he is an incredible player, and he is one of the favorites to go ahead and win MVP. We'll continue the conversation on the other side and wrap up the show here. This is the GM Show. Well, to sort of wrap up our conversation on the blue chip quarterbacks, once again, those quarterbacks, Patrick Mahomes of the Kansas City Chiefs, Joe Burrow of the Cincinnati Bengals, Jalen Hurts of the Philadelphia Eagles, Justin Herbert of the Los Angeles Chargers, and Josh Allen of the Buffalo Bills. And you were making the point as we were heading to break here, Michael, about how Jalen Hurts, it's been a combination of his work ethic and also a combination of the Philadelphia Eagles organization to have a plan in helping develop the quarterback Jalen Hurts, who has now become a franchise QB. And we saw it with the contract that he got earlier this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, look, his completion ability of throws down the field has really improved, right? I mean, when he first started out, he was in hitting open receivers, he was above 25% missing them, and so was Josh Allen. And he's improved his accuracy down the field. There's no question about that. But what they've been able to do is utilize his skill set, his unique skill set, his size, to run this six-back offense, this single-wing offense, where even if he doesn't have the big runs or lead the team in rushing, the threat of the run becomes so difficult. And look, the Eagles want to run the football. I mean, make no mistake about it. They want to run the ball, and they make explosive plays off the run. And so when you break that into it, and they've tailored this offense, which fits him perfectly. Now, would he be great if they went back to the old, you know, would Jalen Hurts be great in the West Coast offense? And I would say to you, probably not. Probably not. Because he doesn't really play a game with rhythm and timing. He plays more of a power game. And then when he gets behind, you know, when he gets behind and he's got to throw it 43 times like he did in Tampa, it's not going to look very good. But what they've done is they've done exactly what I've said, and credit them because they recognize this, right? They've built their team around his strengths. They bring in A.J. Brown, right? They got Waddle. They got Goddard. And now all of a sudden, you know, they've got a running back. They don't put any money in the running back, and now they can execute. Credit Sirianni with it. And I think that's really what it is, because if you just watch the Tampa game and he's staring receivers down, he's trying to read it out, they went back to the board and said, okay, we maximize this player by doing this. I think Pittsburgh's going to do the same thing with Pickett. New England has to do the same thing with Mac Jones. Every team has to do the same thing with their quarterback, maybe with the exception of Patrick Mahomes. I think Herbert, as great as Herbert is, if they maximized what he could do in a better way, in a better frame, which is take some of the heat off of him and, you know, take some of the pressure and not have it be a 45-pass game, I think that would make him look like a better player. Not that he's not a good player.
Mm-hmm. It's funny the difference a year makes, because I remember that Tampa Bay Buccaneers playoff game they were referencing when the Eagles were on the road, and Tampa, that was the year with Tom Brady, the year after the Super Bowl when the Bucs were the 2 seed, and people were calling for them to play Gardner Minshew in that game. Like, that's how bad it had gotten in that playoff game. And then to see it now where we're having this conversation where Jalen Hurts is among the 5 best quarterbacks in the NFL, I think that's kind of just like, to put that into context, it just sort of puts a bow on how good he was last season and what the Eagles have done to help him out, and also what he's, credit to him as well, with the work ethic that he's done to go ahead and get better.
I mean, look, he's more accurate on deep throws. His first year in the league, he was 26% of the time he threw a bad ball. 26.7% of the time he threw a bad ball. Mm-hmm. Last year, he got that number down to 14.2. And he was on target with his throws 77.8% of the time. And why is that? Because they're giving him throws that he's comfortable with. This is my point with Lamar. I think Lamar becomes a better player when you give Lamar the throws that he's comfortable making. And a lot of it is when you are playing the position of quarterback, you are constantly trying to design the offense around what he does. And I don't want to hear this nonsense, well, we got to be multiple. If you're not any good on offense, if you don't have any tendencies, you're not any good, right? Mm-hmm. The year Lamar won the MVP, the year he threw for 3,127 yards, he still had 17.5% of the bad throws. But why was that? That was his best year ever in bad throws. Last year he was at 18.1. But the reason he was so good in 19 is because they threw the ball in the middle of the field. They had Andrews and Hayden Hurst. That's where he throws the best. That's when he's throwing the football the best. And so, you know, and they only had very low drop percentage. That was the lowest drop percentage he's had in his career. But they keep trying to design an offense around, oh, we're going to bring in, you know, we got Zay Flowers. We got, you know, Hollywood Brown. We're going to bring in all these outside receivers. But that's not what he does well. He does well throwing the ball in the middle of the field. Now, maybe they're going to use these receivers in the middle of the field like San Francisco does. But that's the key. And when you get that, it's like you don't want a guy who's a great three-point shooter taking a shot where he's not at the spot where he likes to be. Same thing with quarterbacks.
100%. And that, Michael, wraps up our blue chip, red chip series from this offseason. Congratulations. Once again, we've gone through all the position groups. If you miss any of the podcasts, we encourage you to go ahead and check them out over at the GM Shuffle. Get it wherever you get your podcasts. But the blue chip, red chips, it's the haze in the barn. And now we play the games. Now we play the game starting on Thursday, which I'm very excited for. And I saw you were tweeting earlier this morning. You were up at it early, man. This is 6:35 Eastern, 3:35 West Coast time. And you tweeted this. You said, what I love most about the NFL season is the routine. Mm-hmm. Each day is different. Each day is scheduled with work that must be accomplished. And the test results are final each Sunday. The next 5.5 months are the best part of the year. Enjoy the routine. Buddy, the routine begins on Thursday.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, when you're in the league, and I'd still take the approach that I'm in the league in terms of studying tape. And, you know, for me, you know, when you're in that early morning club, you kind of have a routine. And when you get to work early, this is kind of what you do. And on Mondays, you know you're going to – the first thing you do when you get in that building is you're watching the tape, you're grading every player in the game. And then you're going to have a meeting, and then you're going to go back over it again. Then you're going to start getting ready for the next week's game, and that's Monday. And Tuesday is all watching next week's game and doing all those things, maybe bringing players in for workouts. Wednesday, it's practice, you know, and then you start working on the next week's opponent. And Thursday, you work a little bit more on college football, and then Friday is mostly all college football. Saturday, you're back working on the team you're getting ready to play, so you're back at that, and you're watching you're watching practice this whole time, and you're writing notes on every single player in practice, unlike what Ron Rivera did, in which we wrote about for the Daily Coach today. You should read it. It's
Sherlock Holmes.
It often happens. Yeah, it's when you see things, but you don't observe. You know, I do this all the time. I walk around Ocean City, and if you've never been here before, but this is a summer beach town, right? And homes that were built 30 years ago are not, the land is what's most valuable. And so you walk the dogs and you like, God, what, they just tore that house down. And I forget what house was there. And that's what seeing is and not observing, right? Mm-hmm. We tend to go through life where we see and don't observe. And that's what Rivera did. He went out to practice every day and he didn't see anything. He wasn't observing. And that's a Sherlock Holmes mandate. And I think that's what you have to do if you really want to be good at this profession. If you're a young coach or you're a young leader, you got to see and observe. And we can learn a lot. You know, Sherlock Holmes is a fictional character, but Sir Arthur Conan Doyle based it off of a lot of him and deductive reasoning. So there's a lot of truth within him that you have to glean.
Yeah, that's a great lesson there. We encourage everybody to check that out over at thedailycoach.com. They're talking about Ron Rivera and the Washington Commanders. The Commanders team that both of us are high on. Expect them to go ahead and potentially.
Except
make
I got a text from a buddy. He said, I agree. He read all the write ups that I had in the guide. You know, and they're like, I'm not buying Washington on Rivera, which really? I kind of agree with. Like, I'm in on that because I think 6.5 is ridiculously low, but I could see why people don't want to do it.
I mean, when you hear the comments that Rivera's made this offseason,
he could get fired for stupidity in the comments. I mean, like, forget the games.
Yeah, I think they'll still be good, but yeah, it's not great from Rivera's standpoint here, and maybe, just maybe, he has his interim head coach calling the plays now with Eric Bieniemy. Maybe that's why he was all spicy about Bieniemy earlier on, saying that the player said he's too hard on him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I want to thank Bill AD and everybody Len Mead at VSiN too. They're doing a promotion for the
football.
If
done
you buy
right.
a subscription, if you buy a subscription to the VSiN, which I think everybody should, it's the best information out there. It's unfiltered, it's honest, and it leans you towards making money. You get a copy of Football Done Right, and if you want to get it autographed, find me on Twitter, and I'll give you my office address. And if you send it to me, I'll send it back to you.
That's awesome stuff. There, you're excited, man. This is the day before it comes out. Yeah. Football done right. Does this feel like it's game day's coming up tomorrow?
No, I think what it feels like is A, I wish my mother were alive to see it, and B, my college roommate shaking his head saying, "You couldn't put two sentences together. How the hell could you write a book?" You know,
two books, for that matter.
Let alone two books.
Hey, well, you must have did something right along the way.
Well, I watched a lot of Rockford Files. I think that if I have a degree in anything, I have a degree in Jim Rockford. I can promise you that.
Football done right. It is coming up tomorrow. Any like little snippet? Give the folks a little bit of snippet. Like what, do you have like a favorite part of the book? Is there something that like you really want people to take away when they read the book?
I really loved writing the television chapter because I work for the Musburger family, which started VEASAN, but because of the impact of Brent and gambling and Jimmy the Greek and CBS letting him kind of talk about it, and then going into the sports line and where people were calling for scores because we didn't have scores then. And I think Howard Cosell, to me, writing about him, and one of my favorite moments as a kid growing up was when Sinatra came back and they had the main event, and Cosell read the introduction line live from New York, you know, a city who resonates. And he goes, and I put that in the book. I wanted it. I loved the television chapter. I loved writing about each player too, because each player, I try to tell a different story of what made the player, not try to just tell you how great he is, you know, and tell you about why he was something special. I loved writing about Joe Montana and the great Ronnie Lott, guys that I saw as a kid watching them. And I didn't know enough then to know how great they really were. But as I look back as an older NFL guy, I think, wow, I was so blessed.
Yeah, that's a great setup there for the book. Once again, Football Done Right. It comes out tomorrow. Get it wherever you get your books. And that does it here for us. And that wraps up the offseason on this Labor Day. Thursday, we will have a game. Lions, Chiefs.
Four-screen Femi's coming, fans.
Oh, the bets are coming. The bets are coming. Thank you to our producer, Elliot Bowman, with us on the ones and twos. Thank you to DraftKings. Thank you to VEASAN. Thank you to you, Michael. I will talk to you Thursday. Game day, it's here this week. Get it wherever you get your podcast. Once again, this is the GM Shuffle.